we present the news quiz with your host, Bridget Christie. Hello and welcome to the news quiz. We start with an advertisement seen in All Saints Church in Fawley, read by Caroline Nichols.
Village fete. Lots of activities to enjoy, including arts and crafts, a bouncy castle, and a reenactment of the 1940 bombing of the church.
Thanks to Chrissy Burley for sending that in. Now, let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right, Mark Steele and Deliso Chaponda? And opposite them on my left, comedians Deborah Francis White and Danielle Ward. Mark, who's been waving a red flag for a green revolution?
Oh, this will be a Jeremy Corbyn with your red flag hint. Because he just keeps going and you'd think all the normal rules would mean that he'd have been stuffed by now all year, all the newspapers and politicians are of his own party going, he's a spy, he's a terrorist, he's an anti-Semite, he makes all the sandwiches for Hamas when they have a picnic. He's going to introduce women-only gravity when he gets in and men will be forced to float. And we've seen a photo of a courgette on his allotment that's the same shape as a rocket-propelled grenade used by Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan. And on and on. And he's going to make all your pets be Muslim. And on and on. And then half his own party going, look at the friends he's got. We can't have a leader who's got the sort of people that he's associated with. We need to go back to the sort of leader we had when we had Tony Blair, when he was friends with Colonel Gaddafi and people like that. And everybody sort of just go on and on and on, and the papers call him everything, and he just sort of smiles, and he just seems to be more popular now. Now even the bankers now, there was a banker from Goldman Sachs on the radio I heard going, well, do you know what, I'm rather coming round to the idea of Mr. Corbyn, and the Queen probably by now is going, oh, I quite like it. I'm sick of all those sycophantic tossers. I think I should be abolished. I'd never really thought about it before. And he just seems to be doing amazing well. He's come up with this sort of a green revolution thing now, and he does it because they call him all these names, and he just sort of sits there and goes, and I think he's probably nodded off during the interview, and then comes back and goes, oh, well, I don't know. I think we're going to have some sort of build some more houses and things like that. And so he suddenly seems to be doing all right.
He seems like he's decided to be in a good mood all the time.
Yes, that's what makes him popular, isn't it? Who's not going to vote for someone who's in a good mood? you go, cool, you've been associating with terrorists. Well, never mind, sonny.
What excites me now, Bridget? Am I allowed to just come in like this?
Oh, yeah, of course, please do.
The Queen wouldn't wait to be asked, and neither am I. And I shut my own car door today.
She needs a self-closing car door.
is all we're suggesting. What I love about this is we will find out the answers to all these things, like what she thinks about Corbyn, if we wait long enough for future series of The Crown. Eventually now. I'm so excited. In fact, when someone was saying the other day, oh, Prince Philip's not very well, I was like, please don't tell me if he dies. I don't want spoilers. Look, everything now is spoilers for The Crown, don't you think? There will be a whole episode at some point about Meghan Markle closing a car door.
Oh, yeah. They'd get three episodes out of that. Does Jeremy Corbyn close his own doors?
Oh, on his green... I don't know about his doors, but on his green job thing, not everybody loved his speech. And actually, I was reading that some critics said that his promises about green jobs and rebuilding the economy were pure fantasy and lacking fiscal credibility. Now, if only he'd written them on the side of a bus, maybe they would have been more persuasive.
I'm surprised somebody's been criticising Jeremy Corbyn. I feel they give him quite an easy ride of it, don't they?
He's definitely had some media training, though, because if you look at the photos post his speech at conference, he's doing the Tory power stance. He's doing the proper legs akimbo, hands on hips, chest puffed out, which makes me think he's a secret Tory. And anybody who disagrees with me is a secret Tory too.
I'm Someone has had a talk to him, I'm pretty certain.
Yeah.
It'd be nice if they talked to him about Brexit. No, like, that's not... All of this green stuff and everything, that's lovely, but it feels like there's an elephant in the room.
They did that a whole thing on Brexit.
Yeah, it doesn't
feel... Which bit? The bit for Brexit or the bit against Brexit?
Well, he said it's going to be a green Brexit. It'll be a sustainable Brexit.
They've announced today there's going to be a minister so we don't all starve to death. It's an issue. I've got a Brexit drawer, so I've stockpiled... I've got a drawer in a divan bed that's genuinely... I have genuinely done this, that has food that I will eat but don't like that much, so I'm not tempted to eat it before Brexit.
Brexit's going to be miserable enough without you having just, like, cup of soup and pot noodles.
Yeah, and economy tea bags and own brand pesto.
Oh, but there'll be parents doing that, won't there, to kids going, don't eat it until Brexit. Those Twixes are for after Article 50. What have I told you?
This is the 2018 Labour Party conference, which closed on Wednesday with a keynote speech by Jeremy Corbyn. Labour's Brexit policy is like my approach to parenting. I just say whatever they need to hear so we can just get our shoes on and leave the house. And or the EU. Corbyn has chosen to focus on the environment rather than Brexit, which is great, because next year, when we're all frantically stockpiling antibiotics and eating each other's pets, we can all take comfort in the fact that it's also slightly easier to build a wind farm. Corbyn explained that Labour is a broad church, by which I assume he means it's getting shitter by the series. Two points for Mark. Deliso, who's got Summit to laugh about?
Ah, you are, of course, referring to the UN and Trump and May at the UN. And there was one point where Trump, right, he said that he'd made greater achievements than any other American administration. And he got more laughter from this than Theresa May got when she was dancing in Africa. Comedian, I'm offended. He gets bigger laughs than I do just by being an idiot. Next thing you know, he's going to be headlining the next Live at the Apollo. It's atrocious. And so many of the things which happened in this, like Theresa May accused Russia of desperate fabrication of the Salisbury attack. Trump accused China of interfering with the next US elections. With all the accusations flying, it felt more like a game of Cluedo. It was Putin in the drawing room with the lead poisoning. In the last election, people thought that the Russians were meddling in the election. Now Trump has accused the Chinese, but I think what bothers him most is that the Chinese are meddling more efficiently and at half the price.
You can't just say every election has just been influenced from outside, though. People don't... Wouldn't you notice if the Chinese were all coming up telling you who to vote for and stuff? You'd notice that, wouldn't you?
Since Trump won, I think the US can't be trusted with their own election, so it's better if the Chinese take over.
I really enjoyed everybody laughing at Trump's speech. But the best thing was, so they all laughed, and during the speech he said, oh, I wasn't expecting that response. And then today he's come out and said, oh, no, I was expecting that response. They were laughing with me, not at me. In a kind of, she was laughing with my penis, not at it.
Does anyone else miss the news being plausible? Because honestly, there are days when I just wake up and I have this feeling like I've fallen into a coma and this is something... like, or I've opened a different sliding door and I'm in the parallel universe. Because I feel like genuinely, with Trump and Brexit and all of these other things that are going on, it's like I'm living in Amando Iannucci's cheese dream.
He stood up, he chaired the United Nations conference and said that they should reject globalism. That's like telling a lake to reject water. Call Hollywood to reject yeast. We need each other to coexist.
Though also, who chose him to chair it? Like a prankster? I don't understand what...
I think maybe it's a tombola system. You'll get a ticket on the way in. You either chair it or you get a tin of beans.
Well, that'll be handy for Brexit. Theresa May took two.
Apparently he called a Kurdish reporter Mr. Kurd.
Stop it. Again, implausible news. I missed it when the news was one boring politician said something boring to another boring politician and the other boring politician got cross and now the weather.
We get used to it. That's the trouble, though, isn't it? Now he could do anything. Now you could say, oh, Trump, you know, he just called a meeting and just set fire to everybody. Yeah, that's what he does.
Next day, you'd go, I didn't set fire to anybody. Yeah. And you'd show him the footage and you'd go, well, different opinion.
This is the UN General Assembly this week with speeches from world leaders including Theresa May, Emmanuel Macron and Donald Trump. Theresa May's visit to the UN hoping to forge new trade deals is becoming hard to watch. It's like someone at a speed dating event whose standards have had to drop. She's the one going, oh, yeah, I met someone, yeah, yeah. No, he's really funny. He's great with my dog. He's got a really reliable car. His name, Bashar al-Assad. It genuinely wouldn't surprise me if Theresa May came back with a US trade deal that permitted the whole of Kent to be fracked for oil and allowed Donald Trump to live inside the Queen. 2 points to Deliso. Deborah, who has put the belling cat amongst the pigeons?
Oh, I think this refers to the story this week about the identity of one of the Russian spies who released a nerve agent into Salisbury. Now, of course, there is a tragedy at the core of this story, but the details, as they unfold, are ever more ludicrous. Like, every single day, a more ludicrous fact comes out. So one of the details here is that the man that was believed to be someone called Ruslan Boshirov turns out that's an alias, not his real name. It sounds like Russian Bolshevik. It's a terrible, terrible alias. His real name is Colonel Anatoly Chapiga. I'm fairly sure that James Norton played him in War and Peace. So this man is highly decorated. This man is kind of famous in Russia. So they sent a man. He was actually awarded a Hero of the Russian Federation, which is the country's highest honour, and also Star Trek's. and some of these things are extraordinary. So Maria Zakharova, who's one of Putin's press secretaries, she wrote that the insider's investigation into Salisbury is a fabrication, aiming to distract attention from what happened in Salisbury. Again, I say, when will the news be plausible again? This is, it's like something out of Poirot, isn't it? This, it was him all the time, the Russian colonel, and how do I know? Because you're highly decorated. It's absurd.
But it's quite encouraging in a way, though, isn't it? Because they're so useless. You would imagine that sort of Russianate from the films, you would imagine that they were the spies come over and that they'd be sort of in disguise and that they'd be able to, they'd escape through the sewers and then they'd have a secret helicopter and they'd have a perfect alibi because they'd hypnotised people to say they'd saw them. And in the end, they just go, I went to see church.
But you're right, he was a terrible spy because even the cover is that he's a sports nutritionist. And I think if somebody's poisoned, your cover should have nothing to do with food. Like if you're a sniper, like, yes, I'm a gun salesman. It should be.
But he's quite famous in Russia. So it'd be like us sending James Corden to boot someone off a bridge. The saddest thing about this story for me is that spy is 6 months younger than me. I've achieved nothing. No one from my year at school poisoned anybody.
You don't know that. Come on.
Could have. That's sweet that in Russia, parents will be saying to their kids, now, why can't you do that?
I think I'd be a really good spy, because I've got a really bad memory.
How do we know you're not a spy, Bridget?
You don't.
She's good.
This week in the news, and I'll be honest, I can't believe we're even covering this, the website Bellingcat has claimed the two innocent Russian tourists whose day trip to Salisbury happened to coincide with the attempted murder of the Skripals are actually undercover officers for the Russian military intelligence. Yeah, yeah. Next they'll be saying that Special K doesn't even contain any ketamine. Whatever. Round earthers. One of the men has been identified as decorated military officer Anatoly Chapiga, who received the Hero of the Russian Federation in 2014, one of the few titles that can only be given to you by Vladimir Putin, the other being the President of America. The Russians continue to claim this is all lies, fabricated by the British government, which is entirely unrealistic. There are only so many lies the British government can confidently tell at once. And what with Brexit, the moon landings and Shergar, we're pretty much at capacity. 2 points to Deborah. Danielle, which saviours need saving?
Oh, this is the story of... there's been a report into NHS efficiency, which has found that the NHS is wasting money. Who knew? They're normally so good with it. How is your computer system coming along? The ambulance service wastes a lot of money taking people to hospital when they could save up to £3 million a year if paramedics, when they arrived at someone's home, just gave people two paracetamol and then turned the telly up really loud so the neighbours couldn't hear their dying screams. It was in the report. But one of the headlines was that an ambulance isn't a taxi to A&E. But that is what an ambulance is. I mean, that is literally what an ambulance is. It's a car that takes you to A&E. Like, I don't know what they're expecting people to do. Like, if you've got a severed hand, are they expecting you to, like, call an Uber? Because I've used Uber and they don't like you bleeding all over the seats, even if you give them 5 stars.
These people, they ring an ambulance and they expect it's going to come and take them to the A&E. you can use the ambulance as a taxi service. They should hire it out, shouldn't they? Make it, privatise it properly so you can ring them up and they say, which service do you require? Ambulance. Okay, where are you going? Oh, I'm going to the cinema.
I don't know. I don't think we can use them. Do you know, in Russia, my friend told me that people in Russia don't stop for ambulances because Putin's created such an atmosphere of suspicion. People don't believe that there's somebody ill in the ambulance, so people just don't get out of the way for them.
What do they think's in the ambulance?
Just some businessman or something.
There's quite a disparity in terms of how quickly an ambulance can get to you in certain places. And the head of the ambulance service said, but a lot of that does have to do with geography. So, you know, the further away you live from the ambulance depot, the longer it's going to take. Well, I know that. I mean, I don't even drive and I know that, so...
Yeah. We went on holiday somewhere really remote, in Cornwall, I think, and we'd got there. I love holidays with the children. One of them always ends up in A&E. Anyway, we'd been there for about 2 minutes, and it was a little cottage, and my son had managed to... just hit his head on the side of a wall and literally blood was bursting out like that. And we were like, and I called 999 and they said, where are you? And I said, I don't know, I've gone on holiday. Yes, literally, I literally didn't know where. I said, I think it's some bloke who, like, rents out some, like, buildings on his farm. But they found out where I was. And so the fire brigade came. A fire engine came down this lane. I said, oh, there's not a fire, it's my son's head on that. And then he went off in a fire engine to the hospital.
That must have cheered him up, to be fair.
No, he's Bridget, never been into fire engines. Yeah.
Was that a dream?
Oh, yeah, sorry, that was my sexual fantasy. I'm really sorry.
How did the fire engine know you were there when you hadn't rung them and you hadn't told them where you were?
Because they only had fire engines in that area. They had no ambulances. It is true, Mark. But they said, we've all got the same skills. You know, I remember one fireman. Oh, I remember one of them. And he was... Do I remember one of them? Anyway, he, you know, I put a record on. No. He said, yes, I've got the same skill set as a paramedic. So, and I went, and a better costume. But no, the fire engine came and he went off.
I reckon there's just one bloke in Cornwall who does all of them things.
Does
you're all right, I don't know what to meet, eh? I'm the plumber.
Because the next morning we went to get some bread and he was the baker as well. This is a report produced for the NHS Improvement, which found significant inefficiencies with ambulances and said that they should not be a taxi to A&E. The report said that the ambulances themselves were an ageing fleet, which I think means now would be a good time for an armada of Spanish ambulances to attack. There are apparently 32 different types of ambulance. There's ones that are parked. There's ones that are going along. How many is that? No, seriously, there's the normal one, the motorbike one, the Wallace and Gromit sidecar one, and my favourite, the convertible one for paramedics with small penises. And small breasts. Patients being treated by the oldest ambulances have complained that some of their ailments can't be remedied with the kit they've got on those. Mark from Berwick has said they had an awful time fixing his broken legs with leeches and milk of the poppy. According to the regulator, these problems make it more difficult for ambulances to hit their targets, which, if you're wondering, are squirrel, 2. Badger, 3. Jeremy Hunt, 100 million. 2 points to Danielle. And at the end of round one, the scores are Mark and Deliso have 4, and Deborah and Danielle have 4. And we start round two with an email announcement at Durham University.
Senior astrophysicist Dr. Wiseman will give a lecture on Monday entitled Our Curious Universe. Please note, space is limited.
And thanks to Chris Jealous in County Durham for sending us that. Mark, which heads are heading to Westminster?
Well, this will be your head teachers, the headmasters, and they've been demonstrating because they're about the cuts in funding to schools. I can imagine them, the speech at the end, and the head has to get up and do 25 minutes at the end when you're all just itching to go. And they're going, and thank you so much for all coming. It was probably like that at the march, wasn't it, at the rally. Thank you so much, everybody, for coming. And let's have a big round of applause for Mrs. Whittaker, who made all the placards. And she was up all evening, so well done to you, and you were all jolly good. But I must say, somebody has stolen the megaphone now. Some of you will know who it is, and you might think you're being their friend by protecting them. But let me tell you this, if you're really their friend, you will come up to me so that I can find out who it is and they can go to Ballstall. But, yeah, they've been at Westminster Bridge, I presume, from the question.
Yes. They meet in Parliament Square before marching to Downing Street.
I feel like it's going to be the most well-behaved march in the history of marches. Because they'll all be telling each other to tuck their shirts in.
Yes. Maybe it won't, though. Maybe they're off the leash once they get there. The one time in their life when they can go
we
mental.
We don't need no education. We can't afford the lyrics to that. That'll definitely be cut out now, sorry.
They sent letters round to all the parents saying that the protests will be relentlessly reasonable and without political bias. Calm down, Arthur Scargill. I mean,
that's an oxymoron. How can you be relentlessly reasonable? That's like saying, I'm going to make love to you all night dispassionately.
I found, when I was doing one of the in-town shows, I was in a place called Barnard Castle in County Durham, and there was a protest group had been set up because there was a little green British Telecom box about 3 foot by 2 foot had been placed on the pavement there. And the protest letter said, one of our members was delivering the local church newsletter and she would have bumped into it if she hadn't looked where she was going. And they organised, and it was reported in the paper, that there was going to be a protest which was going to involve about 10 women from the village were going to knit a big tea cosy and place it over the top of the green cabinet, and that was going to be the protest. And then it said, but then they called off the protest because they thought that was too militant.
Like, these are not the most efficient ways that they should be protesting. It shouldn't be head teachers going to protest. They should bring their dumbest students as like exhibits with like badly spelt picket signs. Or instead of protesting, they should just tell all teachers to just start teaching nonsense. Like 7 times 4 is 208 until there's a change or something like that.
Or they should say that they're going to protest and then just go to an arcade or something.
You know, if they waste our time, we can waste their time.
Oh, yeah. This is the news that 1,000 head teachers marched on Downing Street this week to protest about unsustainable budget shortfalls. The Department for Education says that more money is going into schools than ever before. Oh, no, sorry, not schools. I meant the DUP. The letter to parents says that resources have been cut to the bone. Resources was the class hamster who is now used as lunch money. I know what they mean. I was helping my child with its homework. And the question was, if a train leaves Paddington Station at 6:45 and travels at 100 miles per hour, why are the Department for Education being such a bunch of dildos? I'm going to do another one, OK? If they don't let me have that. If a train leaves Paddington Station at 6:45 and travels at 100 miles per hour, why are the Department for Education being such a bunch of wankers? Two points to Mark. Deliso, have a listen to this.
Oh, yes, this would be the story about Benny the whale, who's been spotted in the Thames swimming towards London. Now, this beluga whale has had a lot of people really concerned, and for any of you who don't know, a beluga whale is a white whale. And I can't help but wonder that if it was a black whale, would people express so much concern for its well-being? Plenty of black whales have wanted to get into the UK and nobody cared. Now, one or two mixed race whales, and by that I mean orcas, have made it. But otherwise, not at all. Tanya Ferry, environment manager at the Port of London Authority, said, "We certainly don't want anyone to try and rescue it." Which is important to say, because I could see a few Londoners on a stag do kind of rolling up their sleeves and saying, "Let's give it a shot. I'll take the tail end."
Yeah, well, it's a London whale, isn't it? That's probably it's been here all along. Probably it's a London whale. If you try to rescue it, no, don't take me out of the sea. I'm here. This is what I like being here, isn't it? Like, here it goes. There, you are. Better out than in. Water out the spout, down the boozer, pint of plankton, plankton top for the missus. There you go.
I suspect that Putin has sent it as a large spy.
And the spy name is Blofeld.
How do we know Benny's not Benjamina? I bet they've just assumed it's a guy, because that's what they do. They've assumed it's a white, straight, pale whale.
They know it's a straight, white, male whale because it's lost and it refuses to ask for directions. Mate, just ask. This is the news that a whale, which is meant to be in Greenland at the moment, has actually been trapped in Gravesend. Rescue teams say they are at the ready in case the animal gets into danger. It's trapped in a filthy, hot river. What are they waiting for? For it to join a moped gang? Head of Science and Conservation at Marine Charity Orca, Lucy Baby, and that's her surname, I'm not being over-familiar or patronising, said,
"This is the most southerly recording." "of a beluga whale in the UK."
I think we can all agree it's either lost or trying to visit Salisbury Cathedral. Beluga whales are nicknamed canaries of the sea due to their distinctive squeaks. Although, as any miner will tell you, and many have told me, they are an absolute nightmare to carry down the pit. 2 points to Deliso. Deborah, who is weighing up the cost of changing their name?
Oh, well, this is Weight Watchers, who have unveiled a slimmed-down version of their name. Weight Watchers has rebranded itself WW in what it says marks the next stage of the company's evolution. And the company says the new name reflects its development from focusing on weight loss, which has gone out of fashion, to overall health and wellness. The chief executive, Mindy Grossman, said the new letters do not stand for Weight Watchers. And so she was asked, what do they stand for? And she said, nothing. It's true. She said, it's just a W next to a W. It's like how Brexit means Brexit, because Brexit can only mean Brexit, because actually it doesn't mean anything, it's a made-up word. They can now boast about having lost 12 letters with simple swaps and an easy-to-understand point system. But, of course, the moment they stop focusing on the rebrand, they're just going to gain all the letters back. My concern for them here is for a company that's always been about losing weight, double U seems like a poor branding decision.
This is one of the genuinely maddest... I cannot get my head around this story at all.
I know. It's basically, because of body positivity and Instagram saying, hey, why are we all trying to look like these billboards? So people are creating their own billboards by saying, look, my body's a perfectly good example of the genre and I'm happy to get it out and show you my body in a bikini. We're now no longer consistently obsessed with looking like somebody on a bus stop. And I had a real moment with this that I had a photo shoot done as a comedian that you have to for your posters and stuff. And I was posing in a big headdress. And because I had very beautiful lighting and very beautiful makeup and a very good camera angle, it was a really great photo of me. And then I do shows at a certain theatre, and they sometimes make billboards of the regular acts. And one time I went in and I saw myself a huge billboard, like a proper huge billboard. And I looked at it and I scurried underneath it because I thought, I cannot live up to my own billboard. I look nothing like... I don't look anywhere near as good as that. And I scurried in and I thought, wow, if I can't even live up to my own billboard, why am I trying to live up to Jennifer Aniston's L'Oreal ad?
Sorry, it's the WW thing. It's not just me, is it? All the things that are happening in the world that are absurd and frustrating and really difficult to understand and probably made up... A company has rebranded it, but the letters don't stand for anything. Or I think they do stand for something, but they've suddenly lost confidence in what they originally... It's just beyond...
And also, like, what is their... Is it their website www.ww? And then just screaming into a void. Yeah. I mean,
dot, pretend we're not about weight loss. They're evidently about weight loss. That's been their whole brand the whole time. They've always been called Weight Watchers. That's what they are. But weight loss now is rightly being seen as something that we shouldn't be aspiring to. We should be aspiring to nourish our bodies and move our bodies and be happy with them today. But to be honest, I think they've just had that meeting. I mean, can you imagine the meeting, which is, guys, we're going to have to get rid of weight from our name. So what, we're just going to be watchers? What if we get rid of all of the letters that aren't the first two letters and let people guess what we're about?
I think all these organisations might do, the RSPCA will say, no, they're just letters, they don't stand for anything, the Queen hates us and we quite like slaughtering foxes. Anything.
I'm not in Weight Watchers because I used to be very concerned about my weight, and then I realised the problem, I had too many healthy friends. You know?
This is the news that Weight Watchers... has rebranded itself WW. This definitely feels like one of those rebrand suggestions that's immediately followed by the phrase, it's 5 p.m, that'll do. Having made a fortune off people's body image issues, the company is now desperately trying to stay relevant, but without losing the income stream that derives from people's insecurities. Basically, they want to have their cake and eat it. 2 points to Deborah. Danielle, have a listen to this. Return to sender. Danielle, why is it crunch time for environmental campaigners?
I'm glad that we've finally hit on the big story of the week. That is that Royal Mail have asked people to stop posting Walker's crisp packets as part of a campaign because Walker's crisp packets are not recyclable or compostable or something like that and won't be until 2025, by which time we'll be lucky to even have crisps. In post-Brexit, it will just be a potato flavoured with soil. Right, so the man who started this petition to get Walkers to switch to recyclable material says that he always recycles his crisp packets and is shocked to find out that they're not recyclable. No one recycles crisp packets. No, what it is this is a man who's finally delighted that he's got an excuse to put crisp packets into letterboxes because that's his real hobby.
So the Royal Mail are annoyed because the packets don't fit into their sorting machine, so they want people who eat to put them in jiffy bags or envelopes before they post them, which
wastes. Jiffy bags. People are fighting against something that's not environmentally friendly. Yeah. You can't put your Walker's crisp packet in protest into a jiffy bag with paper on the outside and plastic on the inside, the least recyclable thing in the world. It's like you might as well put it into a live tuna that's...
Why don't they just wrap it in asbestos.
They say it's because it doesn't fit in the machine, but that's not true. It's because if you put a crisp packet through one of those machines, it makes the machine taste of prawn cocktail and then the sorting office people want to lick it. There's nothing more pleasurable than licking a bag of crisps that's empty.
God.
Oh, it's lovely.
Crisps. Oh.
I don't understand really this story, to be honest with you. Like, if you want the crisp packets to go back to Walkers in protest... Yeah. Firstly, you've had to buy Walkers. It's not much of a boycott, is it? You've had to buy the Walkers and eat all the crisps. And secondly, of course, if you just put them in a post box, they're not going to... Royal Mail aren't going to go, oh, I guess this is for Mr. Walker. You need to put a stamp on it, at minimum. But I do, in a way, think putting a picture of the Queen's face on a crisp packet is the most British thing you could possibly do.
I used to protest about the tampon tax, and I used to send my soiled underpants in an envelope to HM Treasury every month.
Really?
Yeah. And I encouraged everyone else to do it as well.
But Bridget, you didn't just put them in the post box and expect them to end up at HMRC.
Oh, I've got some standards down here.
It's not like, you know, when you send a letter to Santa and you can just write to Santa and it gets there.
You need that to be very well addressed and, like, say, don't open unless you're in charge of the budget.
I did do that, yeah.
Just back on the crisp thing, though.
Yeah.
Right, so obviously a crisp packet is full of plastic and not very good. It'd be great, you know, like Woolworths used to have the pick and mix. And if you had that with crisps and all the different crisps and you got like a shovel and you could shovel your crisps into your shopping bag.
No, because remember they found out how many different samples of urine were on, like,
and
snacks on bars. That's why they stopped them.
What?
Oh, like 1,000 different specimens of...
I'm not suggesting...
This is the most confusing question in 30 years of the news quiz. There's not a single bit of it that has made any sense at all. It started off with people putting crisp packets into letterboxes, and then a legitimate answer to that was that tampons have also been put into the post box, and then a legitimate answer to that... Oh, knickers. Oh, I see.
Come on.
Then I apologise. It's perfectly reasonable. That explains why there's all this urine rather than... Oh, is it salt and vinegar or is it urine and roast beef?
Who's
Gary Lineker we're talking about?
Is it not political enough for you?
I just don't understand the question about the... I don't know why people are putting crisp packets in post boxes. I think they're mad.
Yeah, we agree with you.
There must be something you'd put in a post box as a protest.
As a protest?
It's trying to change the world by annoying people.
Yeah. I know, but I don't know who you're trying to annoy. You're just... The postman's got to go, that's it. I'm going to go and start a revolution because I'm fed up with all these crisp packets. It's just the most... You might as well go, oh, do you know what I did as a protest against the education cuts? I've put a dandelion on a hedgehog.
This is the row between an environmental campaign group and Walker's Crisps that now
and
involves...
clearly the most controversial question of the night.
That that now involves the Royal Mail. The campaigners want crisp eaters to send back their empty packets to walkers in order to highlight waste. This is the most British campaign of all time. It simultaneously involves good old-fashioned red letterboxes, complaining, not spending any money, and crisps, our national food. Until about 10 minutes ago, I thought sticking your crisps in a letterbox was a euphemism. 2 points to Danielle. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting they'd like to share?
Well, this was heard on BBC TV South Today Regional News by Richard Treadwell in Dorking. 50% of women breastfeed their babies in Dorset.
Deborah.
This is from Danielle Acker, who saw this in the Financial Times. An office employee accused of theft was caught on CCTV, standing on a table to remove a ceiling tile to hide a computer in the roof. The defendant claimed at Southwark Crown Court that she had merely been adhering to her company's clear desk policy.
Danielle?
This is an advert for a mini fridge seen in some local classified ads sent in by Imogen Carr in Bristol. For sale, a great mini fridge, perfect for beers. There are some penises drawn on the fridge, but this adds to its charm.
What's the number? Thank you. And now let's take a look at the final scores. Mark and Deliso have 8, but this week's winners are Deborah and Danielle with 8. No, sorry. You've both got 8. Everyone's got 8. It's a draw. Before we leave you, here is a pub restaurant review in the Daily Mail sent in by Peter Forster in Glossop.
This restaurant has comfy chairs and bags of atmosphere. An open fire awaits at the back of the pub. The kitchen is run by a Polish chef who will surely be poached soon.
And with that, goodbye!
Taking part in the News Quiz Extra were Mark Steele, Deliso Chaponda, Deborah Francis-White and Danielle Ward. In the chair was Bridget Christie and the news was read by me, Caroline Nichols. The chair's script was written by Max Davis, Jessica Fostercue and Robin Morgan, with additional material by Laura Major. The producer was Nick Coop, and it was a BBC Studios production.